We hear a lot today about fake news. When you look on the TV, when you look online, we hear about fake news. And it gets to that point that we are tempted to give up on any news or any claim just in case it turns out to be fake, in case it turns out to be untrue, and then we end up looking a bit of an idiot. And there are things that we can do to try and find out whether a report is true. We can check the author. We can check the source of the story. If it turns out it's something on a spoof website, we can be fairly confident it's not true. We can use a fact-checking website, see what that shows. Google are in the process of introducing a fact-checker alongside the searches that you do on Google so that you can know at least whether it's been shown to be false, even if you can't necessarily be sure that it's true. But I haven't actually seen the fact-checker on Google working yet, so that in itself could be fake news. We look at the content and see, does it stand up? Does it work? Does it fit together? But we don't just believe something because it happens to fit with what we would like to be true or our particular biases. And what we don't do is just stick it up on a social network so that someone else can point out whether it is true or not. We see politicians dismiss anything that they don't like. That's just fake news. We hear of the damage that fake news can do, and yet seemingly intelligent people still get pulled in by it. There was a recent survey of children, young people, and university students in America, and it showed that a frighteningly large number of them are willing to accept anything as long as it looks like news. I haven't seen a survey for Britain, but I'd be amazed if the result was any different. I think with our current digital age, it's become more and more pervasive. But the risks around fake news are nothing new. In the passage of the Bible that Christy read to us, there is a warning about fake news. Following the death and burial of Jesus Christ, the Jewish authorities recognized the threat of a potential fake news story. Jesus has predicted he's going to rise again after 3 days. Now, they don't believe that he will do that. They know that dead people stay dead. But this is the story, and they want to prevent that fake news. Now, some of them will be Sadducees. They believe that once you're dead, that is it, end of story. Others of them will be Pharisees. They will believe that there is coming a time when the Messiah, the Christ, is going to come, and he will bring a new age, a new start, and there will be a day of resurrection when everyone who has previously died will be raised to new life and face God in judgment. They are on different sides. They believe different things. And yet on this one thing, they are agreed. Jesus is dead and Jesus is going to stay dead. But they recognize the threat that these disciples who, to be honest, they were nobodies. They were no one special. And yet Jesus had called them to be with him. And they would probably have quite liked having a bit of that celebrity, a bit of that fame, a bit of that status. And Jesus had predicted that he was going to come back to life after 3 days. And so you recognize there is a temptation. They might come, take the body, and then suddenly announce, oh yeah, he's back. He's alive again. Yeah, he's popped off down the shop, so you can't actually meet him yourself. But he is alive. And so to stop that, what they do is they get this guard to go and stop any risk of that happening. Because there is a real danger that if this happens, this kind of political movement that had gained a bit of momentum and then that had been destroyed when Jesus was executed, it would come back, it would be stronger, it would be more powerful, and they might not be able to stop it. And if they can't stop it, then the Romans will really come and crack down on them. And everything that they've worked to protect and sustain will be destroyed. So they act. They act to eliminate the problem. And these predictions of Jesus returning to life, they center around a 3-day period. Once that time has passed, the threat will have gone too. So despite it being the Sabbath, Jesus has just been put into the tomb, the tomb has been shut, it's now the sunset on the Friday, the next day, their Sabbath. Despite it being the Sabbath, despite them being the custodians of the Sabbath, the ones who believed this was more important than anybody else believed it to be, they go and meet with Pontius Pilate. This man's a Gentile. Meeting with him would have defiled them. But they view this as something too important to wait. So they go, they ask for this guard to protect the tomb for a few days, ensuring that nobody else could get in. Now, Pilate does not seem overly concerned. He says, well, take a guard, make the tomb as secure as you can. There's already a large stone placed in front of the tomb. It would be large, heavy, circular, in a kind of rut along the ground in front of the tomb. Very difficult to move, but not impossible, because tombs in those days would take a number of bodies. Joseph of Arimathea, whose tomb it was, he would have been expecting to use it as well, probably with other members of his family. So the soldiers arrive, they find everything in place. They seal the stone around the tomb. And they place this armed guard there. Now this is unusual behaviour, particularly at a tomb where there's frankly nothing that's worth stealing. Because you did get grave robbers. And they would come and they would take the strips of cloth that were wrapped around a body. They would take the spices. Because the cloth and the spices, they were things you could go on and sell. You could make money out of that. But they would go, they would unwrap the body, leave the body behind because that's awkward and cumbersome and you don't get anything for dead bodies. It's just, there's not a market for them. I'm sure otherwise they would have taken it. It's an unusual thing to do, an odd thing to do. Pilate may have thought, well, this is all unnecessary. But he allowed it. It's only going to be for a few days. The authorities, the Jewish authorities, the Roman authorities, they clearly consider the risk of fake news is now averted. And so they can rest contentedly on the Saturday night. But the following morning, they would not expect what was going to happen. Not long after dawn, a loud banging on the door. And some of the soldiers coming in and telling them what's happened. And according to Matthew's gospel, they tell them everything that has happened. Now, it's not quite clear how much these soldiers knew. Earlier on, it says that these rough, tough soldiers had been so terrified, they shook and became like dead men. It's not clear how conscious they were of everything that went on. But clearly, they had been put there to guard a tomb. And they had failed to keep what was in the tomb inside and what was outside of the tomb outside. And so there were going to be serious repercussions for them as a guard. Usually a guard would face the penalty of whatever they were guarding. A dead body, what's the word? Well, it's dead. Death would have been what they would have expected, having failed in this case. And so when the chief priests come up with a solution, something that you can do to protect yourselves and have some money into the bargain, they leapt at the chance. So the people determined to stop fake news now become the originators of fake news with their dishonest solution to the problem. Now maybe they don't see it as dishonest. Probably 20 years ago we'd have called it spin. These days maybe we'd call it alternative facts. What it is lies. They're spreading lies. Now we do not know exactly how Matthew heard about this. It seems to me likely that at least one of the soldiers, having seen what they'd seen, heard what they'd heard, experienced what they'd experienced, may well have believed these reports of a risen Jesus, may well have turned to Jesus Christ as Lord and Saviour, and so become part of the church and told Matthew about it that way. But it leaves the disciples with an enduring problem. At the time that Matthew is writing his gospel, his account of the life of Jesus, 25, 30 years after this has all happened, the fake news about disciples stealing the body, it's still there. People are still hearing about that. It's difficult to stop rumours. They have a problem countering the lie. But there are also enduring problems for the authorities spreading the lie. The talk of Jesus rising from the dead is also not going away. If they'd had a body to produce, they would have produced the body. So this is the one you're saying is alive. Doesn't look like it to me. Christianity would have stopped in its tracks. But their story depends on some incredible things. It requires that a trained and disciplined group of soldiers all go to sleep on duty. It requires depressed, dispirited disciples emerging from their hiding in locked rooms to go and risk facing an armed group of soldiers. It requires them being able to break the seal on the stone, move the stone out the way, unwrap the body, replace the linen in the shape of a body, take the dead body away, all without waking up these soldiers. It doesn't seem plausible. Even the chief priests recognize that this may come across badly. They say to the soldiers, look, if Pilate has any issues around this, we will satisfy him and protect you. So they've tried to prevent fake news. They've ended up creating fake news. But although their story doesn't ring true, the story that Matthew tells of Jesus being raised again to new life, is that any more credible? There was a survey of British attitudes to the resurrection on the BBC News website about a week ago. And within that, they quoted the Reverend Dr. Lorraine Kavanagh, who leads an organisation called Modern Church that are working to promote liberal Christian theology. And she said, I think the people answering the survey are being asked to believe in the way they... The question was, do you believe in the resurrection? I think people answering the survey are being asked to believe in the way they might have been asked to believe when they were at Sunday school. You're talking about adults here. And an adult faith requires that it be constantly questioned, constantly reinterpreted, which incidentally is what my organisation, Modern Church, is all about. Science, but also intellectual and philosophical thought, has progressed. It has a trickle-down effect on just about everybody's lives. So to ask an adult to believe in the resurrection the way they did when they were at Sunday school simply won't do. And that's true of much of the key elements of the Christian faith. Is she right, the Reverend Dr. Lorraine Kavanagh? Is it really the case that due to developments in scientific, intellectual, and philosophical thinking, the church has now finally realised that dead people on the whole don't come back to life? So we can safely reject the idea of a literal resurrection. No, of course not. They knew then, as we know now, that when somebody has died, in the usual run of events, they stay dead. If they didn't see this as a miracle, if they didn't see this as something exceptional, unusual, they wouldn't have made such a big deal out of it. Of course, science and medicine and technology, all these things have developed. But in New Testament times, they knew these things. And I want to suggest that the Reverend Dr. Lorraine Kavanagh is coming up with some patronizing nonsense that belittles the intellect of people back then. those who had been walking with Jesus are just as shocked that Jesus is alive as anyone else. Now, the story that the priests told, the story that the soldiers spread, has all the marks of fake news. It has seemingly credible witnesses. It has a very human understanding of the situation. And the main players are consistent with what you would expect. If you're trying to make an odd story seem true, you put those kind of details around it in order to make it seem more credible. Now, I grant you, the story of the resurrection of Jesus Christ is an odder story. But it doesn't have any of the hallmarks of what you would put around it if you were trying to make something seem more believable. First of all, the first witnesses to the resurrection are women. Now, one area that I agree with Dr. Kavanagh, we have progressed in the place of women in society. These days, women are a full part of society, but back in those days, if it was a case of giving evidence in a court of law, a woman couldn't do it, because a woman's evidence was just, frankly, not believable, because she was a woman. I am pleased we have moved beyond that. Please don't think I'm defending that system. That was how it was understood at that time. If you were creating this story and trying to make it believable, you wouldn't have your key witness, your key evidence, as someone who would not be listened to or believed. If a woman said it, then decent people would not believe it. But here we have Mary Magdalene, we have the other Mary. You just wouldn't make it up that way. It creates hurdles that are difficult to overcome. You wouldn't include an angelic visitation within your story if it's a fabrication. You'd keep things within the life experience of your audience. And yet Matthew, Mark, and Luke all include one, or in some cases two, angels sat at the tomb explaining to these women what's happened. Now, they are not necessary to the story. We know, they knew, that actually Jesus had kept saying, "And after 3 days, I'm coming back to life again." You don't need an angel. The women could have looked at the tomb, seen it was empty, and gone, "Oh yeah, Jesus said he was coming back, didn't he? Off we go." You don't need an angel in this story. And it's put in because it's true. You wouldn't make your key figures, the main leaders of the church at the time that Matthew is writing this, so slow to understand what's going on. These are the people that are now the authority figures, the leaders, the dignities. And yet they come across so undignified, so slow. A few verses after where Christy finished the reading, we have Jesus in the presence of his disciples on the mountainside, giving the Great Commission. And they worshipped him, it says. But it also says, but some of them doubted. He's there right in front of them, and still they're doubting. When we have disciples walking to Emmaus, and Jesus falls in and walks with them, they don't recognize him. We have Thomas, the rest of the disciples say, "We've seen him, he's alive." Thomas doesn't believe it. Time and again, these accounts of the life of Jesus written by or with his disciples have the disciples looking like idiots because they don't get it. And never more so than with the resurrection. But there are also positive reasons to believe the resurrection story happened. Happened literally, just as described in the New Testament. There clearly was an empty tomb. There was nobody there, or the authorities would have brought it out. They could have discredited the resurrection right there, immediately. The tomb had no body, but wasn't completely empty. I mentioned about those linen strips being left there, just as if they were still wrapped around a body, but the body had moved through them. The spices, everything that was worth something, was still left behind. And there are accounts of people meeting the risen Jesus. In Matthew, we've heard of Jesus meeting with these ladies. They fall down and worship him. Later, we read of Jesus meeting with his disciples, giving the Great Commission. We'll look at that in a couple of weeks' time. Elsewhere, we read of Jesus appearing to Peter, to the 12 disciples, on one occasion to more than 500 people, many of whom went on to spend the rest of their lives telling people that Jesus was alive. Many of them died for that belief. Would they really have done that for something that they didn't believe, something they thought and knew was a lie? This story of Easter resurrection, if it was concocted, is bizarre and would never have gained any credence. But all the evidence within and beyond the New Testament pushes me, and I hope pushes you as well, to the conclusion that this is true. In the survey of attitudes to the resurrection on the BBC website, it's no surprise that the overwhelming majority of people who identify as Christians believe in the resurrection. That's kind of what I would expect, and I hope you would expect. But what I found surprising when I read through that was 9% of British people who claim to be non-religious, non-Christians, also believe in the resurrection. 1 in 10 people in Britain today, I know 9% is not exactly 1 in 10, but it's close enough, let me away with the maths on that. Roughly 1 in 10 people in Britain today who are not Christian still believe that Jesus rose again from the dead. But they haven't done anything about it. And I wonder this morning whether that might be you. Or that as you've listened this morning to some of these reasons to believe that the resurrection happened, you've thought, actually, no, that is true. And if that's the case, what I find baffling is why you'd still hold back from putting your trust in the one who came through death and rose again. The one that Father God raised to life to demonstrate that everything Jesus had claimed, everything Jesus had done through his life was true. He's the one who died to save you and rose again to show the new life that he calls you into. And there is no better time to start this new life than today. I took that step when I was 13, on the 17th of October, 1987. I've never once regretted it. I've found I don't just have to rely on the evidence of those who wrote in the Bible, those who met Jesus in the first days and weeks after the resurrection. I have met him too. I have a relationship with him today. And to accept the resurrection, but without putting your trust in Jesus Christ, is like being sick, having a pill in your hand that you believe could heal you, and not taking it. This Easter morning, put your trust in the risen Jesus Christ.